remember being inside of it, and it was like the hottest day of the year in Portland. I think it was like the 4th of July weekend. And I could think of nothing else but how miserable and uncomfortable I was in the sweat lodge. I was pouring sweat. Like I'd have like a couple sips of water here and there, and the water was not cold. It was warm. It was like room temperature, this temperature of the sweat lodge. But what that opened up actually was like, I couldn't think about anything. What was coming through was not thoughts, okay? But what I did have was like an image of just like jumping off of a cliff or something like that without a safety net. And I realized at the time is that what I was really committed to is not transitioning out of the career or creating an awesome life. What I was really committed to was having a safety net and having safety. So it was like, yeah, right? And then so now that I got aware of that, it's like, oh, there's something I can play with now. There's something I can actually work on and transform. So yeah, since then it's been just getting like taking away that safety net and being more aware of the safety net in different places and systematically like removing it.
This is the Angles of Latitude podcast, session number 103 with community leader, copywriter, and dream builder, Eric Finnegan.
This is squadron leader confirming hostiles inbound. Prepare for battle.
What you're about to hear is the integration of life.
Clarity is power.
If you live each day as if it was your last, someday you'll most certainly be right.
Liberty.
We choose to go to the moon.
It's happening.
And all things geek.
Yeah, I'm not sure I know how to answer that.
You got a badass over here.
Welcome to the Angles of Latitude podcast.
Hey everyone, welcome to the AOL podcast. I'm your host, JC Preston, founder of New Inceptions, a website dedicated to helping people find their own personal freedom. And if you're new to the audience, this is the show released each Thursday where we bring you life lessons or a message from successful entrepreneurs, experts, and artists to help you do your life's work and live a lifestyle that you're proud of. Now, before we get started in this session, I want to actually mention something from this past week. And as you all know, Texas has been dealing with Hurricane Harvey and the aftermath. And while to most people it might be an out of sight, out of mind kind of thing, especially if you don't pay attention to the news like I do because I'm a news junkie, you know, I wanted to remind you guys that Layla Ramadian, who most recently was on our session 100, is originally from Houston. You know, she's been having a bit of a hard time having to, you know, check in with her family and friends down there. So if you could send her a bit of your guys' support, that'd be great. So lots of love, Layla. Hang in there. Also, I was just listening to an interview with one of the most accurate storm predictors in the industry, and he said that there's another hurricane coming our way called Irma, which is heading straight towards the U.S. Virgin Islands and San Juan. So if you know anyone in those areas, please let them know, because frankly, I think part of the reason that Harvey hit us so hard was that, you know, everyone was awestruck by the eclipse, and then boom, suddenly there's a big giant hurricane knocking on our door. And so, yeah, you know, please let anyone you know that might be affected in that area or on the East Coast to pay a special attention to Irma coming up. Anyhow, that all being said, hope you're having a great week. You know, this week is currently going into the Labor Day weekend, and I hope you guys have had a great summer. It's totally flown by, as you probably have realized. But, you know, I'll be taking more pictures with Maria at one of the American Multisport Triathlons this weekend, which, you know, that's always fun. I get to play with my new D500, which is, yeah, I'm always trying to catch up and learn more things about that thing. Also on the AMS news, though, is that we've picked up license agreements with Dallas and Boston for our trail run series called the Viking Dash Trail Run. And so if you're in those areas and have been thinking about doing a trail run, you know, official news on that will be soon on the website at americamultisport.com. Now, today's guest is someone that co-host Daniel Postman, I believe, is a great example of how even people that look like they have everything figured out might not exactly be that case. And luckily for him, you know, he had an epiphany that his life wasn't going the way that he wanted it, which, you know, a lot of people might feel that way, but they don't ever really do anything about it. And, you know, he started realizing he was building a life based on having a safety net and, you know, not one where he was actually able to be who he was. His name is Eric Finnegan. And, you know, I have to admit, after having the chance to talk with Eric in this interview, I can see why a lot of people from the foundation actually like him and recognize him as a leader. You know, he's made a lot of changes in his life in a couple of short years. And, you know, he had a lot to lose to make those transitions. And I think that if people believe that they can turn I think that if people believe that he can turn his life around as much as that he did, that they can as well. And even though it might take them a bit more time to do so, he's really a great example of what's possible. So anyhow, in today's session, we discuss that past life of his, what made him realize that he wasn't pursuing life, but instead that safety net, and you know what he's been able to do with his career since then, where the ideas for his three companies have come from, and what it means to develop personally through emotional and relational intelligence. Now, before we get there, I just want to remind you guys about ClickFunnels. And if you've been following the blog and the show for a while, you know that I've started this side project of learning about and developing sales funnels. And what is a sales funnel exactly? Well, it's basically every process that you go through that starts with you seeing something on Facebook or learning about it here on a podcast, it's the type of situation. You're going to hear a URL or you're going to click through a URL and it's going to take you to what's called a landing page. And that landing page is going to say, hey, give me your email and I'll give you free stuff. And you take the free stuff and you're like, oh, this is cool. And then you check it out and you're like, oh, this person really knows their information. And then from there, you get emails from it, and then eventually they're going to hit you with something. Hey, I hope you're enjoying the awesome content we're giving you. Hey, just wanted to let you know that if you appreciate what we're doing for you, then we actually are coming out with this awesome product that you should definitely look into. And so therefore, that's the sales funnel, because you're building trust throughout that entire situation there. And that right there is kind of the traditional one, but there are ones that are much shorter that you can do with local businesses that really can turn those businesses around if you can help them out. And anyway, that entire arena is being spearheaded by different people in the ClickFunnels community. And a couple of those guys is past guest Arnie Giske, and along with actually next week's guest, J.R. Rivas. And when you pair the ClickFunnels with something like Facebook or Instagram, somewhere where you see these ads, you know, it's pretty amazing the results that you can actually get. And, you know, like I've said about ClickFunnels in the past, it's a one-stop solution that not only gives you the landing page that I was talking about, but it gives you the autoresponder, which is what sends out the different messages in that email campaign. And it also has a shopping cart. And what that means is if you don't have to worry about integrating all these parts together like other solutions would have you do. And in fact, it's a lot of simple dragging and dropping, to be honest. It's kind of like comparing Canva to Photoshop. I mean, it's that kind of a thing. I might not be able to do everything you want to do with it, but it does enough and it makes it simple enough that you can get what you're wanting to do done. So, if you're thinking about making a sales funnel yourself, ClickFunnels is something that I highly recommend you check out. And you can do so free for 14 days by going over to newinceptions.com/ClickFunnels. And if you want to find out more about sales funnels in general, like I was just talking about, you can pick up the free copy of the book .com Secrets by ClickFunnels founder, Russell Brunson, over at newinceptions.com/.com secrets. And that's spelled out. It's /.com secrets. So that's where you go to get that free book. That all said, let's get this great conversation with Eric Finnegan started. Show notes and show note extras can be found at newinceptions.com/103. And of course, I'll be on after the show to fill you in on anything we might have missed. Hey everyone, welcome back to the show. JC here. And today as co-host, we have someone that hasn't been on the show for a little bit. And his name is Daniel Postma. Daniel, how you doing, man? Long time no here. What's up?
I'm doing phenomenal, JC. Crushing it in every way of life. You know, since the last time I've talked to you, I've become a full-time pirate.
Yes. I need to know about this.
I now work on a ship called the Good Fortune in downtown Mackinac City, singing songs with kids, sword fighting with them, swindling them out of their buccaneers, and tying them up to the mast. And that is one of many new adventures I've undertaken since the last time I've met you, but I guess it's the last time that we've interviewed each other or someone
right.
on this podcast.
Been on the show. Right.
Yeah.
Man, that's cool though. I mean, it's, you know, when I see the pictures of you on Facebook and the different things that you've been up to, and even hasn't the city itself like kind of highlighted you guys a couple times, or am I just...
No, that's true. Like I've been on TV as a pirate.
Yeah.
Newspapers, also just a lot of, like, I think on a couple of paid advertisements, there's been pictures of me with a little kid tying them up to the mast. Like, it's pretty phenomenal. I think we had a post that had like over 500 shares, and it was a picture of me as a pirate with someone else on the ship. And I was like, that's really fun.
Dude, you got some cool, good jobs up there. I spent some time, you know, I've been up your way pretty much every year, and definitely love the summers up there. And so I can definitely understand where you're coming from. But anyway, going on to today's guest, someone I think we're both super excited to have on. And, you know, I've learned a lot about him recently as he was helping the foundation's most recent class through launch. And, you know, he also did a few other things, including the course experience itself and, you know, helping to move it from a class, which is the format that we were used to one that's more evergreen and something that's going to be a little bit more rotational. So I'm kind of curious about that. But, you know, the truth is as I've been seeing more and more of his posts, I've learned that he's a pretty unique individual. And I mean, in 2 years, not 5, not 10, he went from, you know, having a successful corporate career to a location independent entrepreneur sort of career. And, you know, he's gone from socially anxious guy and awkward to embodying that, you know, someone that you could call a leader. And, you know, he's also moved from being terrified of relationships to moving on to being depressed and being more grateful about life. And I think he's a great example of someone that's living a happy life in general. Would you say that's about right, Eric?
Oh, yeah, man. I mean, the happy stuff is most of the time. I'm definitely not happy all the time, but... I think there's a little bit of difference between happy and enjoying life. And I'm definitely enjoying life almost every day.
Well, definitely appreciate you being on the show today. And how you doing?
What's up? I'm great. Really excited to be here and have a chat with you guys. When you asked me to join, it was like, sure, I'm not sure what you want to talk to me about, but I'm totally down to have a conversation with you guys and share what I know and share my story of a transition that I've gone through over the last couple of years, and anything else I can really your audience might be interested in.
Right. Well, again, definitely appreciate you having here, and you know, to do as much as you've done in 2 years, it's something else. But before we go into everything that you've done with the foundation, and which, you know, again, changing how it's even formatted to what it is now, and, you know, putting your little thumbprint on it, because, you know, there's been a lot of greats that have gone through that. And, you know, I'm kind of curious about who the old Eric was. Who was he? What were some of his beliefs and how did he get to where he was, which again, by most people's standards, was highly successful corporate career, right?
Yeah. So around the time I was, 31, I was a VP at a big real estate investment firm. We managed about $36 billion worth of real estate in the US, Mexico, Brazil. I was the youngest VP in the company. We worked with institutional investors. It was a, we worked in a high-rise office building in Manhattan, and I'd spent a lot of time and a lot of energy working up to that point and getting there. Mm. Really to get there, what I did is figure out what I was interested in life. And what I was interested in life up till then was making a lot of money, getting really financially secure so that I could retire early and have some other kind of life that I wanted. I was mostly interested in making money and basically built my whole life around that.
Mm. Wow. And even up through school and all that, I mean, had that always been your focus? Or?
Oh, no. No. I mean, something kind of ticked, I think, when I was just after college. So I was probably 22 or 23. Right around that time, I was in a band, actually. I was in a punk band. And we toured the United States. We toured. We were in Canada a bunch. We went to Europe. But at the end of one of those tours, I came back with a negative balance in my bank account. We weren't, financially successful at all. Had a lot of fun, but it was costing me a lot of money. And I remember my student loans were going to start coming due within a month or two, and making the decision of like, okay, like I have to really shift now. I have to become an adult and start making money and start paying back these student loans, and generally transition into the sort of adulthood phase of my life. I was 22 or 23 at the time. I think I was 23 when this happened. So that's what I did. I ended up moving to San Francisco to find a better employment opportunities. I was living in Syracuse, New York at the time, and there wasn't a whole lot of future there in the career that I wanted. So I moved to San Francisco. I got a job in an industry that I knew nothing about, which is economics and finance. And spent the next 7-8 years, I think 8 years, really like getting to be an expert. Like I wanted to be an expert in economics and investment strategy. Wow. So built my whole life pretty much around that.
And Syracuse, San Francisco, that's a hell of a jump too. I mean, what? New York was it right down the way. I mean, did you just want warmer climate or what was that a jump?
Oh man. I remember being on tour the summer before and we didn't have any shows in San Francisco, but we had a show in LA and then our next one was in Portland, and we drove through San Francisco, and we had a couple days off. So we spent some time there. And I remember saying to myself that one day I'm going to live here. It was just the coolest city I'd ever been to. And we had been all over the US. And I remember walking down some street there and eating a burrito or something like that, and just thinking to myself, like, this is what I want. So I'm going to come back.
What was it about that city, if you could put it into like a word?
Yeah. I mean, this is literally like a moment, a flash of like, I want this maybe, 10 years ago now. But I think what it was is there had like a weird kind of vibe to the city. Like it wasn't like Minneapolis or Pittsburgh or DC, and nothing against those cities, but there was something very unique about San Francisco. And it took me only a couple hours to like really feel it. But I think we were on like Haight-Ashbury, and just like, it was just so weird. It didn't make any sense to me how like a city could be like, look like this, how people could act like this in a great way. I felt like really, felt really like open to me. And I grew up in a small town where literally everyone knew each other. You know, we didn't even have a stoplight. That's how small it was. So So kind of getting to this place where you can be kind of anonymous. Nobody really knows who you are. You can kind of be anyone you want to be, was like so fascinating and so attractive to me.
So do you feel that during that old career that you were trying to impress anyone, or you just strictly think it was to build that bank account?
Yeah, that's an awesome question. It was really funny, actually. Like, none of my friends, I made all my friends, you know, when I was younger through playing punk music, like around the world. So, when I transitioned into this career, like, you know, and I'd meet people out, you know, and I'd meet friends of theirs, they'd say, "This is Eric, our successful friend." And I actually felt kind of ashamed by it. Like, wow, that there's these people that are kind of living their life, doing their thing, and somehow I was considered more successful. But actually, I was not really happy with it. But I think that what I mean by ashamed was, like, I saw them as, like, kind of, they seemed happy, or at least they were living, they were surviving. And there was such a scarcity mentality that I had at the time, where if I wasn't making really good money, or I wasn't, like, working at a job where I had to wear business casual or dress up in suits, that I'd feel panic and I wouldn't be able to do it. I wouldn't be able to do what they're doing. So, to answer your question, what was that?
When you just said right there was that you would feel panic if you didn't have to wear a business suit. Can you talk to me more about, like, what was that specifically, like, that, like, yeah, that panic?
Yeah. I like the question. So the panic was like thinking, like, I'm going to end up 65 and I'm going to have no money in the bank. Or even worse, my mom is going to end up in a nursing home someday and I'm not going to have any money to help pay for it.
Mm. Yeah. And so would you say that suit was kind of like the embodiment that you were actually going forward with your life then?
Yeah, totally. It was like the symbol that I was on the right track to making money so I can support myself.
Gotcha.
You know, family. Totally.
Right. So I'm assuming, you know, at the beginning of the show, through the introduction, tons of transformations. Mm-hmm. And again, 2-year period. And I'm assuming that a lot of these transformations were tied to one big underlying change. What was that change? What happened in your life that you were suddenly like, and the switch was turned on and you're like, oh, mm-hmm, crap, I'm not living for me, or I'm not going in the right direction.
Mm-hmm. Ah, man. As you ask that, I'm like coming up with all these, like, wait, but it was all these, like, these 24 things that happened over the last few years, and that's what made this shift possible. But I think that there actually is something, like, singular or something pivotal that happened. And yeah, okay. So I'm remembering. So there was a time I went to Portland, took a trip to Portland to visit a friend of mine. And I had been kind of, you know, thinking about that this whole, like, career thing, like, wasn't good for me long term, and I need to start looking at other options, like, how can I make a living, how can I really do life in some other way. And I remember picking up 4-Hour Work Week and sort of studying that for a while. Yeah, right. And so while I was out in Portland, you know, they give you some exercises in the book, and before my friends woke up every morning, I would go to this coffee shop and read the book and do some of the exercises. And I remember one of them was like, okay, so you had to think, what is the worst case scenario? This is, like, the worst thing that could possibly happen if I was to transition into something else, right? Like, what is the absolute worst thing that could happen? And then how could I get back to where I started in terms of resources and everything else? And it wasn't during doing that exercise that, like, the epiphany happened. But on that trip, I actually went to, like, a sweat lodge ceremony, this Native American sweat lodge ceremony. And I remember being inside of it, and it was, like, the hottest day of the year in Portland. I think it was, like, the 4th of July weekend. And I could think of nothing else but how miserable and uncomfortable I was in the sweat lodge. I was pouring sweat. Like, I'd have, like, a couple sips of water here and there, and the water was not cold. It was warm. It was, like, room temperature, this temperature of the sweat lodge. But what that opened up actually was like, I couldn't think about anything. There was no, what was coming through is not thoughts. Okay. But what I did have was like an image of just like jumping off of a cliff or something like that without a safety net. And I realized at the time is that what I was really committed to is not transitioning out of the career or creating an awesome life. What I was really committed to was having a safety net and having safety. So it was like, yeah, right. And then so now that I got aware of that, it's like, oh, there's something I can play with now. There's something I can actually work on and transform. So yeah, since then it's been just getting like taking away that safety net and being more aware of the safety net in different places and systematically like removing it.
So what is a safety net?
And very good point or yeah. Good question, Daniel, because I'm also thinking not only is what is a safety net, but why is it bad? Because a lot of people desire, I mean, that I would say that the entire generation Xers and boomers, that was their goal, man, was to get that safety net. So what, I guess, why was it necessarily not for you?
Well, I think the safety net in and of itself wasn't bad. Maybe a better way to say it is what I was really committed to is living without fear or not having fear or staying safe, I guess is the better way to say it. Mm-hmm. And what I realized and what I got conscious to and aware of is all of the things that I would be doing if I wasn't afraid of failing or afraid of ending up on the street or fear of like my worst case scenario, my nightmare scenario.
Wow.
So, you know, when I think of like what my nightmare scenario is, it's ending up homeless and with no friends. Mm-hmm. And like realize, wow, that's actually what was keeping me in my job. Like not having friends, not having family, not having a house. But
so
when I say it, it just sounds so ridiculous at the same time.
So how did you eliminate the need for a safety net?
I think the short answer for that is just find people that were doing what I want to do and copied them. Found out what they did, found out how they dealt with it, and just copied them.
You mean that's allowed in life?
Totally. I'm the most like unoriginal person you could ever imagine meeting.
Wow. So tell me about your time in Breckenridge, Colorado. I mean, you were there for a year and a half. You paid no rent. Yeah. And you said you did a lot of snowboarding.
Yeah.
So at this point, you dropped your job. You have gone, you know, pursuing your new freedom. Why here? And like I said, tell me about, you know, not having to pay rent.
Totally. So I think getting to Breckenridge is like what it took was quitting my corporate job without any, I didn't have any income source lined up. I didn't have any business set up or anything like that. I had been trying for a couple of years and there was nothing getting off the ground. And what I really needed or why I moved out to there and why I quit the job was I actually wanted to remove more of my safety. So like totally aware that I didn't have any money coming in. I had built up a bunch of savings to like live for a while without any income, but I really wanted to know how I would act in that environment of not having any money coming in. So I moved out to Breckenridge for a few reasons. I like to tell people that I just wanted to snowboard for a lot that season. But the truth of it was that I was interested in a girl that lived out in Colorado, and she lived, you know, a couple hours away from Breckenridge. But essentially, it got me closer to that. It was either like Southeast Asia or snowboard, and I picked snowboarding. It happened, you know, yeah. I picked over the course of a few days. So essentially, it was a pretty easy decision for me.
A lot of people do pick that Asian option.
Yeah.
So, yeah, especially with the whole snow and everything, because there's a lot of people that don't like snow, especially if they're, you know, they have been living in San Francisco for a bit or know, whatever. So, you know, based on what you were learning about who you used to be, you know, I would say that that person became an introvert. Like, you were, again, this punk rocker, but over time, because you were so focused in finding the safety, that you became kind of in your own, you kind of reshelled yourself. I don't know if you ever had a shell before you were a punk rocker, but you did put yourself into a shell. And from what I see now, I can see that, you know, you are someone who's constantly sharing what they're doing and busy being more of an extrovert. So how did you become so articulate in expressing your new self? Mm-hmm. Or was it always this way? Mm-hmm. Did you like journal beforehand, or how did you get so darn expressive?
And I'm loving the reflection, because I think I have a different tracking of all that. I love hearing, yeah, like that frame of it. So the question is, how did I get so expressive and sort of thing? I think, I don't know. I think when I sit down to like write now, if I'm not like writing marketing copy for a client or for my business, like it happens just so fast. It's like lightning. There's no like thought put into it. It's just like pure channel from what's ever going on for me to like either typing it out or writing it out. I definitely do journal though every morning, for 10 minutes or so, just to like get whatever's in my head out of it. But I don't know if I have a really easy answer for that. I think, writing has always been fun for me in some way, and taking, you know, the whatever is going on in my head or whatever is going on in my experience and sort of translating it into like written English. It's been a really fun challenge, actually. And what I've done, maybe the way I've done it is actually getting more and more attuned and like aware of my own embodied experience or my own like thoughts. Is that, and putting practice on that, and like the writing just happens naturally from there.
Right. Well, and you also, like you just said, you already write a journal.
Yeah.
So you're already used to practicing it there, I think.
Totally.
Maybe that's part of it. Did you have that journal when you were in corporate America?
No. But I did a lot of my work was, you know, writing like whatever was going on in my head. So I was like, I'd come up with, you know, investment strategy based on economic theory and market data that I would gather, you know, and try to craft this masterful strategy document. And it would rely on very articulate writing so that it made sense to anyone. So I think I was always in the practice of writing and being articulate with thoughts and ideas.
Gotcha. Okay. Yeah. I mean, it was just so many people that, you know, my background being technical, you know, as technical types, we don't necessarily are so expressive in that particular way. We're expressive, don't get me wrong, but it's usually more of a one-on-one sort of route or method.
Yeah.
And it's just, you know, for those of us who are kind of, you know, like a lot of, I would also call myself like an idea person.
Yeah.
And so, because I'm always thinking about these grand ideas, it's like, I would rather connect with, you know, people that could share those same ideas as opposed to, I don't know, just writing down all that craziness and then forgetting what I was thinking about prior to.
So there's something about connecting with other people with ideas that you enjoy.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Okay, so it's really cool because I actually was there near the beginning of when you started this. So I might have some background on this, but you started a copywriting and marketing consultancy business.
Yeah.
What was the seeds that started that?
So I really wanted to start a business that was all online so I could kind of do it anywhere and I could not worry about having physical retail space or physical space that I had to pay rent for. Anyway, so I found a mentor and mentors to help me learn this. And that's how I know a few guys from the foundation. And in the first thing that they teach us is learn copywriting, learn the art and the science behind direct response copywriting, which is the ability to communicate in writing and to persuade the reader to take some action, whether that's click a link in an email, send in an order form for a book, leave a review on Google, whatever. Learning that art of persuasion through writing is priceless, is what I heard. And you can, one of the highest leverage skills, especially as a starting entrepreneur, is to learn direct response copywriting. So that's what I did. And they gave us materials to learn. And I hand copied by hand some of the greatest sales materials of all time. So like the Wall Street Journal letter that was sent around for 10 years and sold $2 billion with the newspaper subscriptions. It's a two-page letter. I hand-wrote that 10 times, for instance. And I ended up doing this practice for about an hour a day for most of our 6 months in the foundation. Mm. And at the end of that is when I actually quit the job and moved out to Colorado. And I had been getting known as being somewhat skilled in copywriting through just friends in the community. I would make posts on Facebook as a joke to like see how people would respond, and I would expect 10 responses and end up getting like 50 or 60. So something was telling me that the way I was writing was engaging for people and they were responding to it. And my first client came from a friend of mine who saw me doing this and knew I was good at and practicing copywriting, and that I was looking for clients, or interested in possibly looking for clients. And she had a project she was working on that needed some emails written. It was a product launch for a guitar lessons DVD. And I ended up writing 3 or 4 emails to their list. And we made a boatload of money from that launch. And that was my first client. And I ended up doing more work for them, for about 6 months after that.
Can you talk about the value of practicing copywriting? And yeah. why had you practice that? 10 times through the Wall Street Journal. Yeah. What was that?
There's something that really fascinated me about the idea that you could write a one-page letter, put it in newspapers, and people would just send you money. Like, there's some kind of secret sauce there. There's some kind of hidden language or hidden levers that are being pulled that are causing people to whip out their checkbook and write a check to somebody that they don't know. And I wanted to learn that because I felt there's a lot of reasons I wanted that, but I just wanted to learn that. So I essentially followed direction. I followed what my mentors told me. And the more and more I found out about these people, these expert A-list copywriters that are world renowned, and some of them are have passed away, but they're still remembered and memorialized. The more I found out about it, it was sort of like this secret culture, this underground network of these copywriters that were just kind of weird, and they relied on these skills that they had built up to just make a boatload of money. And I was interested in that, so I just started practicing more and more. And the analogy that I heard that really fit for me was when I learned to play guitar, and this really happened, is I would listen to a song that I really liked. Classic song. I remember listening to House of the Rising Sun by the Animals, actually, and playing that song on guitar for days, trying to play it, trying to come up to the finger picking and the chord changes. And I wasn't quite getting it, but I was learning how to play guitar just by trying to play that song. And when it came time to play easier songs, it was way easier. And so I think what was happening was something similar. It's you want to learn how to write the best copywriters on the planet in history, just copy what they did. So your body is moving and your fingers are working and your mind is all connected. And you're sort of picking this up and soaking your subconscious with the techniques that they're using in their sales letters. So I think that's why hand copying works.
Here's a question continuing on that thought.
Yeah.
You said that this is one of the basic skills that you think that new entrepreneurs should know is copywriting skills. Are there any others that you, just off the top of your mind, are things that they should know as well?
Yeah, I think what it comes down to is you need to be able to talk to your audience, talk to your market. And it was like, I chose copywriting as the thing to get better at because I wanted to write emails to a list that I had built and have people respond to those emails. Another way to do it is just to get really good at sales and one-to-one sales, and knowing how to effectively engage people and in work with their interests to then eventually sell them something. I think you need to learn copywriting or sales. And I think ideally you learn both. Because the reason I say that is because you could have literally the best product idea in the world and the coolest idea. But if you don't know how to communicate it, it's just an idea and no one will care.
Wow.
I understand that. Yeah. Yeah. I understand that one.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Well, and you can think about it this way. I mean, at least in my background, it's, you know, again, having the technical background, it's like, oh, I can express all the little, you know, bells and whistles that something, some sort of new phone or something will have. But unless I can actually connect those bells and whistles to how they're going to benefit the end user is not really going to care. So,
right, exactly.
You know, that's just such a major thing that so many, fresh entrepreneurs just have no idea, especially when you start getting into the tech world where their background is tech and they're just geeking out about these things that they can create, but they have no idea how to, you know, make conversions based on that thing.
Exactly. And this is where I see so many people getting trapped in their journey of starting a business from nothing is they think they have a really great idea and they put all their eggs in just like building out a product or building out a ebook or building out something. And what, you know, any of the intro level or like the programs that are targeted at starting entrepreneurs is they tell the people that they need to learn marketing first. Because like you said, like you could have the most brilliant technical knowledge in the world. But if you can't communicate your ideas effectively, then they'll never get off the ground. And this is what people do, is they get so married to their product or their idea that they come up with this, like they have this the tunnel vision between them and their product. And they just start talking about like the switches and like the LED lights and the schedule on their email sequence or whatever it happens to be. Where the person that they want to sell to doesn't care about switches. They don't care about spacing between emails. They don't care about volume controls or whatever it is. They care about how it's going to improve their life. And they don't even care about how it's going to improve their life unless you can communicate that you understand them and that you understand what right. they want in their life. So yeah, that's my rant.
What is it? People don't care how much you know until they know how much you care. Isn't that kind of relevant at that point?
That's a great way to say it.
So you got your first client from someone saw a Facebook post of yours and they knew that you were interested in getting clients and that you're practicing the skill. From there, is that how it continued to grow? People just kept saying you making posts and the word got out that you were into copywriting? Or how did you strategically grow your copywriting and marketing from there?
Great question. Yeah, there's two ways. Number one is mostly through referrals. So what my game was, or what I think really worked for me, and I didn't know this at the time, I didn't like actually try and do this, but what I found that worked is that I was doing work. This friend of mine that gave me my first client, it was what I call like a hub of in a network. Okay. So from there, this person knew of a lot of other people that needed copywriting work. Where me at the time, I didn't know anyone that needed copywriting work. So I got myself into a position where I really helped this person, when they needed help. It turns out they were a hub in their network and just through that person, I ended up getting probably half of my business in the first year through one person. And so that's how, I guess, it wasn't necessarily strategic. It was more just dumb luck. But when I look back, and if I was to continue desiring to grow my business through referrals, it would be to identify these hubs in my network and offer them value of some kind and form relationships, form deeper professional relationships with them. The other way was that I was part of several communities of entrepreneurs, and I kind of saw this as the opportunity and invested more time into building community and joining community and getting more integrated into different communities. But I got to be known as the copywriting guy, and especially the email copywriting guy. So anytime anyone in those communities needed help writing launch emails to their list for a product, they came to me because I was that guy. So those are, I'd say, the two ways: referrals and then just get to be known as the guy in your community, guy or the girl or whatever.
So do you still consider yourself that guy, or do people consider you that guy still?
Yes, and it's become different now a little bit. Like, what I don't want to do is position myself as the copywriter, and the guy who's going to actually sit down at the desk and pound out these emails that people are going to send. What I'm good at, I think, where I best excel, is really truly understanding what would help some person the best. So it's talking with business owners about their business and really getting clear on where their hangups are, where their problems are, where the challenges are, where the opportunities are, and really crafting systems, marketing systems that solve those needs and solve those problems that are specific to that business. And then I can hire a copywriter to come in and write copy that I want. But as I'm sort of moving up in the value chain, that's how I'm doing it. Because
gotcha.
If you want to hire a copywriter, you can go on to any of the Facebook groups. You type in copywriting Facebook groups into Facebook, and you'll find several with over 10,000 people in them, and say, hey, I want to hire an email copywriter and pay them $50 an email. And you'll get 20 people saying, yes, I'm dying to do this. Or it doesn't make sense for me to walk in the door unless it's, you know, 10 times that now.
Hmm. Your second business was Biz Hacking Retreats. Did this elevation of you realizing that you were somewhat of a, preferred to be a, more of a coach sort of thing or analyzer, did that lead to your second business? Where did the second business come from?
So the second business came from, essentially, it was a group of people I was already working with in a mastermind. And I found, actually, so one of the things I've been really learning and focusing on is improving how I show up in relationships. Okay. So I began a relational meditation practice called Circling about 2 years ago now. And I was in a 9-month intensive training last year to facilitate Circling. And what that is essentially being an expert in group dynamics and being aware of how groups at work and act, and how I'm relating to that group, okay, and how people in the group are relating to it. So I got really curious and really interested in this world of facilitating groups, specifically with an intention on building business. And I invited my mastermind out to Colorado last summer. And I was like, guys, I have this like really cool format I want to experiment with. Just pay me for, you know, expenses, and we can run it and see what happens. So they all said yes. They all trusted me, which I'm so thankful for. They all trusted me enough to say yes to this, and flew out to Colorado, and we got a nice house up in the mountains and kind of secluded ourselves there for the weekend. And essentially what it looked like is people experienced in the span of about 2 hours breakthroughs in their business and breakthroughs on goals and problems in their business that would have taken them 2 to 3 months otherwise. And they did it in 2 hours. So it's this sort of unique format that I haven't heard of anyone else doing based on this relational practice called Circling. And so that was just a test, like an experiment of would this work? Would this format work for a mastermind? And so I heard, you know, really good feedback from them that it didn't only work, it worked amazingly well. They got, you know, those 2 to 3 months of progress in the span of 2 hours.
Okay, so can you define what is 2 to 3 months of progress in 2 hours? Because I don't know about our listeners, but maybe like I was not fully engaged, and then I heard you say that, and I was like, wait, what? I was like, where's my pen?
Yeah.
Where's my paper? What do I need?
I could tell I was going a little bit into the weeds, and so that was my direct response copywriting skill in action right there. Is like, wow, that's a really attention grabbing piece right there. So. essentially what it is like you'd come to this mastermind with a goal in your business or a problem that you're facing in your business, and you want help solving it or meeting the goal. And most of the people that were coming were solo entrepreneurs, meaning they ran their business, they owned their business, and there were no other stakeholders in the business, no employees, no other owners. It was just them. So when that's you, when all you're the only part of your business, you have to do literally everything. And solving some problem or working towards some goal, sometimes, you know, you can't always put your most important goals and at the top of your priority list for a given day, because, you know, if I have a strategic plan to grow my copywriting business, I need to first actually worry about keeping my clients happy. So most of my days can be spent making clients happy rather than growing my business. So,
right.
The 2 to 3 months piece was from them. I didn't come up with that. But it was, I guess, based on an estimate of how long this would have taken them to do. Essentially, what it looked like is, you know, there was someone that came to the business to the weekend who was sells athletic wear on Amazon, and he was doing about 15K in revenue per month. And he said, "I want to get to 60K a month by year end." And this is in August, so we had a few months to do it. And so what he did is he came up with five trigger points or five levers in his business that he wanted to pull to get to that 60K. And then through, you know, some facilitation and some other sort of group processes that I can go into later, but essentially assigned each of those levers to someone in the group, and they went and executed on those. So by the end [S2] Right. [S1] Of their 2 hours in the hot seat, they had real work done, real action taken in their business and toward their goal that would have taken them, 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, the estimates kind of ranged.
So were these levers specifically like copywriting things that like emails that he sent out, or were they like changing some stuff on his website? What kind of levers were these?
So for an Amazon business to grow for where he was, he needed, one thing was financing. He needed a finance inventory. So somebody had a background in the financial space that came to the weekend. So he put together a plan to how to actually finance inventory for the next 3 months and how to find funding. Another one was conversion rate optimization. So looking at his sales pages on Amazon and optimizing those for conversion. Another one was he was wanting to build out more of a brand. So he got to be known as, you know, his brand rather than just some random Amazon seller. So we worked on it. Right. Another person worked on that. And so this is the format of mastermind that I created. However, the facilitation of the process, I think, requires some pretty good skill in making sure we're staying in the agenda and people are asking the right questions and that we're really getting clear that these are the five levers that need to be pulled. And not only that, but what needs to happen within each of these levers to really move it forward. And to know the kind of questions to ask and to really dial in that process, I think requires some group facilitation skill.
You studied the circling method for 9 months. It seems to be the connector of your ability to pull these levers out of what these people needed to focus on pulling. Yes,
correct. So it's actually like really hard to describe what circling is, but I can describe it by its benefits. And what it's done for me essentially is it's increased my ability to stay present with people. So I mentioned, you had mentioned, and something I'd sent to you over before was I used to be like really socially anxious, like really awkward socially. And circling has actually helped me just be comfortable in my own skin in social situations and in groups. And not just comfortable in my skin, but move into a space of actually being a leader. It's helped me form deeper and more rich connections with friends. Mm-hmm. And I think the relationship that I had with the girl that I moved to Colorado for, like, wouldn't have been possible without having the skill and built by the practice of circling, the relational skills.
Is it somewhat like NLP, or I mean, mm-hmm. I'm grasping at straws here. I was just
great question. So what it looks like, if you were an alien to like look down onto some people doing circling, what it looks like is 2 to 3 people at least sitting in a semicircle around one person. Okay, so one person has the attention of these at least 2 or more people for an hour. Okay, mm-hmm. So it's a meditation. So, but the object of the meditation, it's not like our breath, you know, where I sit and meditate every morning and I'm focused on my breath. It's not that. The object of the meditation is actually the relationship and the other person and how you're experiencing the other person. So the whole goal in circling is to get their world and try and understand what it's like to be that person in that moment as they're with you. And that not only just like get their world, but also share with them what it's like for you to be with them. Okay. So it's this like really present moment. You can get really deep with people when you're staying present and being curious. And there's a few rules around it that you'll see people, you know, you see people talking in kind of a funny way. And what the rules are is basically you want to own your experience at all times. So that means you're speaking in a way that isn't arguable. Okay. So that someone isn't going to argue your point and say you're wrong. Okay. So that could be something like, I could say it's really cold in this room, and someone on the other side of the room could have a completely different opinion. And for them, it's not cold. It's actually hot because they're not standing under the air conditioner. Way to own that is to say, I feel really cold right now. And so the other person across the room can't really debate that because you're describing your own experience and you're owning it. Okay. Mm-hmm. Another thing is to not assume anything. So not assume anything is true about another person. So if someone says, I'm mad, okay, you can know what mad is for you and you can know what anger is for you, but you actually don't know, and I make that assertion, is you don't know what angry is like for them. Okay. So in circling, we can just ask, like, oh, what's the anger like, or what's the mad like? Are you feeling it in your body somewhere? Did something just happen? Or are you holding this from before? Mm. You can get really precise on what it's like to be with them right now.
Right. Right. And I could see how this then would help you during those retreats. During that first initial experience. But how did that become something that you wanted to reproduce?
Great question. So I asked for feedback after I ran this first event. I asked for feedback. I say, how was it, guys? Like, really, like, tell me, give me the honest feedback. And that's when I started hearing, like, oh, we had breakthroughs in our business that would have taken 2 months, you know? And they also, one of the guys or a couple of the guys said, you should actually start selling this. And you could have charged, I think I asked them for like $400 for the weekend just to cover costs. One of them was like, I would have paid $2,000 for this thing easily. So that sent off a light bulb in my head. Oh, wow. Okay. So this might be something that I could do full time. Really, the first one was literally just for fun. I had no idea it would turn into anything.
Excellent.
And so an opportunity came up, not a few months later, to do another one. And I knew what worked in this first weekend. And I just basically reproduced it.
So do you have any more business hacking retreats coming up?
I'm currently, I don't have one scheduled right now. What I'm looking for is communities of entrepreneurs that would, basically, I think why it works is that these people already kind of know each other first before coming into the weekend. So what I'm looking for before doing the next one and before putting the next one on the calendar are communities of entrepreneurs that are already existing, that are interested in doing more, you know, in-person connecting experiences like this. So I don't have one on the calendar, but I'm looking for an opportunity.
Excellent.
Yeah.
So your third business that you started was an intern accelerator.
Yeah.
What is that? What was that?
So the intern accelerator makes it really easy to find, hire, onboard, train, and mentor interns. So it comes in the form of a 6-week course with live. What we do is we actually give you tools and templates and job ads and everything that you need to actually go from no interns to having an intern in the span of 6 weeks. And then we train you on how to use all the tools and the templates.
So what problem does this solve and how does it improve people's lives?
The problem it solves is, so if you have like, if you're an Amazon seller or you're a coach or you put out content on a regular basis, almost any solo entrepreneur that's growing their business is spending their time on tasks that are easily assignable to someone else. And for some reason they haven't done it yet, or they've tried and failed. Okay. So one way an intern can help a growing business is say you're on Amazon, you're selling products on Amazon and you're building your social media following. Let's say you want to, influencer marketing is huge now. You want to get more influencers to promote your products. You can spend 4 to 5 hours a week doing influencer outreach, finding influencers, reaching out to them, following up with them, tracking, and just managing all that stuff. And it's going to take you 4 to 5 hours a week, potentially. Or you can find an intern to do it and hire an intern into your business for 3 to 6 months. And what they can do is they can actually dial in the process so well and create SOPs and systems and processes and, that you could hire. Then you could then hire either a VA to complete it for you or hire another employee to do it for you. So what it solves is the scaling problem in a business and the leverage problem. So that your sole entrepreneurs, their time is super limited and they just want to replicate themselves to do everything in the business. And we help people take the first step to building a team and really leveraging their time, scaling their business, and making more impact in the world.
Interesting. Two questions.
Yeah.
One is, where does these solopreneurs find these interns? Because that's kind of a question that I'm always asked. And I'm like, yeah, you go to a department at a college. Mm-hmm. That's my answer. yeah. But I'm sure there's more to it. And the other thing is, I mean, are these paid or unpaid internships and why not carry that? I mean, is it common for these interns to become part-time as they're going back to school or what's that look like?
Yeah, totally. So the first question, where to find them? It really depends on what the role you're hiring for. You always want to start with creating the role first before trying to hire anybody or even writing the job ad. So you create the role, write the job ad, and it kind of dictates it from there. We've had a lot of success for our students posting on just the internet job boards, really. There's Indeed, does a paid, you can post ads there. There's a few other websites that we give you to post on. Paid or unpaid, we don't specify paid or unpaid. Unpaid works, and I think works better than paid, to be honest. So a lot of people will have objections of like, it's like free labor and you're exploiting these people who just want experience. And what we found is that as long as you keep it a win-win relationship between you and the intern, everyone's happy. And no money needs to be exchanged back and forth. So what it makes it a win for the intern is that they get mentoring and they get education, they get experience in the real world, having an impact on a business.
Mm. Is there any like ideas of figuring out, or maybe you already have, of getting them college credit as well? Or
yeah, there, I mean, yeah. So exactly. Some will some will be able to get college credit for it, and you'll just have to work it out with the particular college, and we help you do that.
Okay.
Gotcha. But that's between you and the college.
So you guys, how did you start that business?
Oh, this is the fun part. This is where I really come alive. I love starting stuff from scratch. So, and not just for myself, but I actually love helping my friends do it too. So, this is really fun. My friend Josh and I, he runs an Amazon business, sells athletic wear on Amazon, and we got together, or he was telling me about, he hired 9 interns into his business. And, last year, and I'm like, dude, why would you do that? That sounds insane. And we didn't talk for a week or two after that. And he ended up coming to Breckenridge and hanging out for a weekend. And he was like, dude, I got to show you these things, show you this stuff. And he starts showing me these systems that he's built on his computer. Basically Google Sheets and job ads and onboarding checklists and all this stuff that he uses to actually get productive work out of his interns. And I was blown away. Okay, so that was one thing. So a day or two later, while he was still up there, we had the idea, we both admire what each of us do in business. Like, he's master at creating systems, and I'm frankly in awe of that. I'm not much of a systems guy myself. I'm kind of flying by the seat of my pants most of the time. And what he was admiring me about is, like, I can do marketing, and I can do copywriting, and I can launch stuff pretty quickly. So he's like, why don't we build something together? Why don't we build a business together and just see what happens? So we set a date on the calendar for a month later. I took a bus to Boulder bought a bus to get to Boulder. And we're like, let's come up with 30 business ideas each and just find one we want to do. And with the goal of, by the end of the weekend, we make our first sale. So what we did is we each came up with 30 business ideas. And from there, we decided what would the business be that we wanted to create? Like, what are the key features of the business that we want? What would be a really fun business to run? What would make it a hell yes? Because we both have thriving stuff on this, like, that take up most of our time. What would be something fun to do, 5 hours a week? So we came up with something we wanted it to be scalable. We wanted it to be easily validated. We wanted it to be an automated sale, recurring revenue if possible. So we took our 60 business ideas, ran them through this criteria filter, and got this one out of it. The Intern Accelerator, 6-week course to teach people how to use interns. And from there, what was the fun part was, okay, this is our idea. We don't know if it actually works. Until we find out if it actually works, it's just a stupid idea. So we spent the most of the weekend actually trying to validate it, meaning in our case, we said validation would be, 6 or 8 pre-sales in the first week. If we could pre-sell 8 spots in this course in the first week, we would go do it. We would go launch the product. So we spent the most of the weekend getting those sales, getting those pre-sales. And we ended up with, I think, one sale by the end of the weekend, and we got up to 7 pre-sales eventually. So we launched the product from there.
Mm, wow. So that was, how much was the pre-sales?
So the course was priced at $500 each, and we sold 7 spots, so $3,500.
Not bad for, and this was just an idea.
It's just an idea, completely made up on the spot.
Wow. Nice. Yeah. Nice. So 3 businesses, how are you able to keep them all going? I mean, which one do you put the most time into, if any of them?
Yeah, good question. I try to follow what I'm excited about, really. Like, I'm not, like, actually doing more mastermind groups is in trying to market those, like, is not super exciting for me right now, so I'm not putting much time into it. I had an opportunity to do one through the foundation, actually, and realizing that wasn't a hell yes for me, so we didn't do it. So I didn't put that time into it. And I don't, the idea of marketing it cold and coming up with a whole new marketing funnel for this thing isn't super exciting. So what I'm doing is, if I hear of communities that want some experience like this, I'll keep my eyes and my ears open. So I'm not putting a whole lot of attention to that one. The intern accelerator is, again, it's a daily or weekly rather practice of like, is this still the business we want to create? And right now it is. And it's enough. It's like the question is this worth spending 5 to 10 hours a week on? And right now I'm going to say yes. But I put about 5 to 10 hours a week.
Gotcha.
The marketing copywriting agency consultancy is the revenue curve on that is way steeper, and it's like way more of a way easier to make money there than it is the course.
Yes.
So I'm spending that's where I'm putting most of my time right now.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and I mean, so are you running Facebook ads in that as well, or?
No.
It's no.
Strictly,
wow.
Strictly through cold email right now.
Wow. That's amazing, because that's like, not many people are still doing that, but congratulations and keeping true to what you know, because I mean, there is just a run on the bank and Facebook stuff, and upcoming guest is going to be all about that. But
oh, awesome.
Anyway. Yeah. Yeah. So
can I ask you a quick question about what is personal development through emotional and relational intelligence mean to you?
Totally. So this is one of the things I wrote as one of my main interests, kind of underlying everything, personal development. So I like to think of it in terms of like a metaphor, that seems true to me. And the metaphor is like, I think we spend our first, 20, 25 years, decorating our Christmas tree. And what that Christmas tree is, it's our personality, it's our persona, it's our habits, our idiosyncrasies, and they're really based on our experience over the first parts of our lives. And we end up at, when we get to be 25 and we see the world we've created around us and see that it's based on all these experiences that I had and all these things. So, but what I found is that like a lot of that stuff, a lot of those things that we take on are defense mechanisms and ways of going about our lives to protect us from either being rejected or mostly rejected, I think, or protecting us in some other way. And for me, what the practice has been in the last few years is to start removing the ornaments off the Christmas tree. So I want to go back to the blank slate of my true essence. Who am I without all the defense mechanisms? And who am I without all the fear? And what I think is there is just a space of true, pure, just like light and love and just goodness. So it's like what I call the soul. And personal development for me is really about taking each of the ornaments off the tree, each of these like ingrained patterns, each of these beliefs that I have about the world, each of these emotions and stuck energy, and really examining them and working with them. Okay. And that can come through. And when I work with them, what happens is they evolve. Okay. So one example of this might be, my shyness in groups. So for most of my life, I was incredibly shy, very quiet, especially in groups larger than say 4 people. I think it's right around 4 is the number that was my threshold. I still notice it today. So what I've noticed is that when I'm in a large group, some part of me feels separate from the group, and that whatever is happening for me and whatever is true for me is somehow like less than others in the group, or is less important or less valuable than others. So what I'll do is I'll sort of separate myself from the group sort of consciously, and doing as a result of doing so, I think I'm like protecting the group's experience. Okay. So that I got aware of that about a year ago that I was doing
whoa,
that.
Whoa.
And since then it's like, okay, now I have this awareness. Now I have choice. And can I show up now differently? And so it's just a practice of, okay, I'm in a group. How do I show up now? And consistently putting attention on that.
That's huge. Is that
making sense to you guys?
Yeah, I'm just noticing where I do that as well. Is like I try to defend a group's context. I like try not to insert my point of view into a group,
right?
Like it, and so that like I can maintain it the way it is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I think a lot of people have that. Not everyone, but I think you know probably 15 to 20% of the population, maybe more, have that based on who I've talked to. But just the simple act of learning about it and putting attention on it as it's happening and welcoming it, what I found allows it to transform and allows my subconscious and my inner belief system to like relax. So that's something I've been putting attention on and putting energy into.
That is so cool. I mean, it kind of, you have to wrap your mind around that one just a little bit, but I can see where you're coming from.
Yeah.
Wow. So we were talking about different businesses that you're doing and that you still put a lot of time into your marketing consultancy. What is something that you're looking forward to doing in rest of this year or just with your career now that everything seems to be working out for you so well?
Well, every day is a problem solving and course correcting. So I don't want to give off the impression that everything is rosy and great. I had a guy, like for instance, say he wanted to jump on a sales call with me last week and he had to cancel it halfway through. He had something else come up and I called him back yesterday and he got really angry. He said, "Eric, if you want a chance at doing business with me, I have one hint for you. Stop calling me." So
what?
Right. So that's just one of the things that I work with that, you know,
uh-huh.
I try not to let it get me down, but it did. I have to be honest. It was like, wait, like what? If I don't call you, how am I going to do business with you?
Right? Yeah, don't question that one. That you're right on that one.
Yeah. But at the same time, I mean, this is a tangent, but like I think that experience that I had, I could really feel it in my chest as he said that, mm-hmm. and I was like, oh yeah, I said to him, I understand, thank you, and hung up the phone. But right after, I noticed like a burning, like bulging sensation in the middle of my chest. Okay, so this is where the emotional intelligence, the relational intelligence comes in. Is like, I just had an experience with a guy, and just for him saying a word, I started feeling something in my body and putting attention on that. It's like, okay, so what I know from my experience is that if I welcome this, if I don't try to resist it, it can then transform. So I did that, and things ended up okay. But you asked me... A little bit of a tangent. You asked me, what am I excited to work on? I'm excited to build this agency out. I'm excited to help clients and I'm excited to help them build better lives and build better businesses. Another thing I'm really excited about is just like connecting with people. And especially people who are like on the same path that I am. And maybe they're a couple steps ahead of me. Maybe they're a couple steps behind me. Maybe they're right where I am. I just love hearing and connecting with people that are up to and they want to create a life worth living for them. And they don't, maybe they don't really know how to do it yet. Or maybe they kind of know how to do it and they're struggling a little bit. I just love connecting with those people. That's what I'm excited about.
Good deal. Rapid fire question segment is starting. And
bring it.
Love this part. And I'm actually kind of curious as to what your first answer for this one is. And it's usually one of my favorites. Who are three influencers or teachers that have launched you to where you're at today?
Three influencers.
Only three.
Okay. the guy who wrote the Tao Te Ching, Lao Tzu. That's one. Tim Ferriss, definitely, and the lifestyle design and just like real precision and how he executes on strategy. Another one I'd say is the name that keeps coming up, and he was a guest on your podcast, Dane Maxwell. Ran, founded the foundation. I think he, like, watching the foundation do their marketing is how I learned everything and where it really all started. So those are the two, or those are the three rather. Lao Tzu, Tim Ferriss, Dane Maxwell.
And in regards to Dane, because I didn't ask it earlier in the podcast, what were some of the books and or resources that he talked about or you learned from the foundation to do copywriting?
Just finding old, like, the sales letters that were really successful and have been really successful. So I've found writers like John Carlton, Gary Halpert, Eugene Schwartz, Joe Carbo wrote my favorite letter of all time, Lazy Man's Way to Riches. Just finding their old letters, and you can find those online on different websites. And that's where I'd start. That's where I started. I actually haven't read many books on copywriting.
Gotcha.
Although I would say Eugene Schwartz's book, Breakthrough Advertising, is like the one that I've read.
Wow. That's come up in a past conversation before. That's awesome.
So, Robert, for your question number two, what's your least favorite social custom?
Ooh. My least favorite social custom is saying bye at parties.
Okay.
That's number one. I mean, that's just like kind of a weird quirk. But, like, you know when you're like sitting around in a group and like someone's like, oh, I gotta go, sorry guys, and it kind of like disrupts the whole flow. You have to go around and hug everyone or say bye. And if you don't, you just kind of slink off into the night and people wonder where you went. There's no like good way to say bye at a party is what I'm saying. I always used to feel shame about doing the Irish goodbye, which is like leaving without telling anyone. But I try to just read the situation, and if people seem to be like really like engaged still and the party is still like high energy, I kind of do one walk through and just kind of make sure that there's no one I need to connect with before I leave, and usually I just bounce from there.
Right. Yeah. I kind of use this what's called the three person rule. It's like, let one of the people that you know that you were recently talking to know that you're checking out.
Yeah.
And then letting the host know that you're checking out, because obviously they invited you. So therefore you probably want to let them know.
Yeah.
And then anybody that's at the door that you're, or near the door, so that, you know, oh, did you see so-and-so head out? Oh yeah. Yeah. He took out. So that's awesome. Kind of the three person rule that I use at those types of events.
That's cool. Did you learn that from somewhere? I'm so fascinated by that. That's really good.
Actually, just by being a host of parties back in college.
Nice.
and I always kind of paid attention to those dynamics back then a little bit. And that was something that seemed to work, or at least for me, so I could tell people that they were gone. That always kind of made a little bit more sense to do.
Got it.
And I tried it out elsewhere, and yeah, seems to work out pretty well.
So. That's awesome, man.
Well, I'm really grateful for that. I don't even tell people goodbye when I'm leaving, like, the country.
Yeah. People want to know where you're at, and they need to be able to talk to someone.
I'm always surprised like that. They're like, where did you go? I was like, I went where I wanted to go.
Oh, wow. If you woke up tomorrow as your 10-year-old self and all your memories were still intact, what would you do?
10-year-old self. What I do for that day, or just in general in life?
From that point on.
I'd probably go eat a bowl of cereal. and then I'd ask my mom if she could help me start a business, or my dad. Let me start a business.
Would they have been receptive to that?
I don't think they would have known how to do it, but they would have supported me.
Interesting. Yeah, because that Caleb Maddox, man, he has a freaking business coach as a dad. So, you know, he's...
Oh, nice.
I think that's what he does. Is that what he does, Daniel?
What?
Matt?
Caleb's dad?
Yeah.
I have no idea.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I don't follow. Anyway, moving on.
Yeah, Caleb is like a 14, almost 15-year-old entrepreneur.
No, he is 15-year-old, and he's made $1 million plus. So, I mean, you're not too far off there.
Good job, Caleb. So,
good job, Caleb.
If you're listening to this, love you, bro. Matt, if you're listening to this, I'm sorry. I have no idea what you do, but I know.
You're there for Caleb. That's what we know.
All right, question. Next question. What is the one thing you believe all high school students must know? If you could insert it into their brain.
That they must know. I wish people had some kind of like emotional like training or awareness on what emotions are. At a young age.
Mm-hmm.
Just so that they're like okay with them. You know, so when they're feeling sensation in their body, they don't like there's just awareness around it.
Yeah.
And like that feeling of like rejection is okay because it's just emotion. It's just right. Energy in the body. It's not, it doesn't mean you're going to die. It doesn't mean you're going to people think anything less of you or that you're unsafe. It's just energy in the body.
Right. And to be aware of it, one thing, but to know what to do with it, I would say would be a good second part of that.
Yeah, totally. Totally. And I would say what I would say just to how to be with it is just to like let it be there and welcome it. It's okay.
What's it mean to live a life of abundance?
What's it mean to live a life of abundance? It's like noticing, it's not just like setting a goal in the future and working toward like, you know, selling my business for $3 million. It's actually looking at areas of your life right now and noticing where you're abundant. And I think anyone can do this. And you know what your life looks like or what people's lives are, you know, look like are different, but everyone has areas of abundance in their life. And for me, the practice has been lately, which has been awesome and a huge shift, is like looking at situations and looking at what's perfect about them. Really just putting attention. What is perfect about this situation right now? Like I'm on this interview, I have to pee so bad, but man, there's a lot of what's happening right now that's perfect. I'm getting to talk with Daniel, my old friend, JC, my new friend. I've got a cool dinner party coming up tonight. It's just an awesome day.
It's only a Tuesday.
It's only Tuesday. Feels like a Wednesday, but it's only Tuesday.
Well, it's okay that you got to pee because this is your final question. Let's say you're back and finishing your job as an investor. What four steps would you have given yourself? Or what four steps would you give people who are listening to this podcast right now? What action steps would you give people to begin creating a life of abundance and moving towards creating a life worth having?
Great question. Find what's exciting for you. Like, what's exciting? What really lights you up? And go do that. That's number one. Number two, find mentors. And they can be, you can hire them as like coaches and business coaches, or somebody that's like 2 years ahead of you that knows how to do it and has been through what you're going through. Find those people and just like really learn from those people. Number three is I would say create some urgency for yourself if you need it. Like for me, I actually needed the urgency. I didn't, my brain works differently and works more creatively when I have a deadline for myself. So I set a deadline, I stuck to it. The other thing is, what you said, four things.
Mm-hmm.
The fourth thing is learn or develop some marketable skill. Okay. And it could be marketing. It could be sales. It could be copywriting. Learn something that's valuable before you jump off the cliff.
Gotcha. Like before. That's a good.
Before. Yeah. Like use your resources intelligently. If you have 3 months worth of savings built up, like don't quit your job. If you have a year, okay, like, and you have skills that you can rely on once you're out of the job, okay, that sounds a little better. Use your resources effectively.
Gotcha. Where can people go to find you if they want additional help or if they want to check out some of your businesses?
Totally. Just find me on Facebook. I don't have any offers created for this or anything like that. Or a special like lead magnets or anything. What I do have is a desire to just say hi to people and hear if this episode impacted you and specifically what about it impacted you and what you're up to in life. So find me on Facebook. My name is Eric Finnegan.
Awesome. Specifically on Facebook. Do you have anything else? Instagram, Twitter?
I'm not on Twitter. I have one post on Twitter, if you can find me there, talking about my favorite song of all time.
Okay.
on Instagram, you can find some photos I take. It's just @_Finnegan. So FINNIGAN.
Okay. Great. Well, Eric, definitely pleasure having you on, and that was a good conversation. I like that. Appreciate it.
Awesome, guys. Thank you. Right. Yeah, JC and Daniel, love chatting. Thank you.
Yeah, see you later, man. Love you.
Love you guys too. Bye.
Well, there you have it, guys. A really powerful and inspiring talk, and I hope it gives you some insight in how you two, starting today, can begin taking action and building the life that you actually want. And if you hit it hard enough, you know, you can have that life in a relatively short time. Let us know what you guys got out of today's show at heyguys@newinceptions or by sending me a tweet @JC_Preston. And remember, we really like those reviews on Stitcher, SoundCloud, and iTunes. So wherever you're subscribed to us from, and if you haven't subscribed, please subscribe. But let us know how the show has helped you, even if it's in the comments of the show notes. In the extra section of the show notes, I wanted to share some of the wisdom from the folks that Eric was referring to throughout the talk. And you know, but first, I want to give you a little glimpse into his work as a copywriter. So I have one video of him, which I don't know why he hasn't published the rest of the series, but one video of him doing a webinar that you might actually get something out of. And this one in particular is how to bulletproof your offer, whatever you're selling, without actually writing copy. And the title alone makes you want to see what it's all about. And I think part of the video might actually be that you write good titles. Anyway, next up, we have a review of Tao Te Ching by Jimmy over at Bright Insight. And, you know, Eric mentioned that this was one of his favorite books. So I really wanted to get a review in on it that I could talk about a little bit what it was about. And I got to tell you, I'm definitely going to be looking into this one, especially if it's as short as what Jimmy says it is. Check out this review before you dive headfirst into it yourself. Eric also mentioned Tim Ferriss as being a favorite of his, as well as Dane Maxwell. And so in case you've missed both of these guys, of which I don't know how you could have, I'll have Tim's recent TED Talk in the show note extras, as well as a video from Dane Maxwell talking about how to start an instant software business. In fact, if you want to know more about Dane, you can check out his interview with us back on session 56. And, you know, he gets to actually talk about his new career in music and why he made that transfer. So if you're new to the show, check that one out. And I think you'll be able to get a little bit more insight of who Dane is. Really interesting dude. And yeah. Great interview. So yeah, that's pretty much it for session 103. Thanks again for joining us for this one. Next week's show, as mentioned in the pre-show, I'll be hosting J.R. Rivas. And if you're not familiar with J.R., he's a really interesting guy. And what he's been doing, as well as what I've seen a ton of folks doing again, building sales funnels for companies that already exist. And what's great about this entire notion is that for the most part, there are tons of resources out there and how to build them. And as you'll find out from the interview, Dan Henry was JR's mentor and building these. And Dan is he's a member of what's called the 2 Comma Club with Russell Brunson, who's the writer of .com Secrets. And he was the founder of ClickFunnels. And so, I mean, it's a kind of a close knit group, but man, they are a powerhouse. So I wanted to bring on JR to, you know, he's fairly accessible at this point still. I wanted him to teach you guys all about the world that he comes from and how he got into sales funnels and you know, maybe it's something that you might consider for your first business yourself. So anyway, make sure you're informed when that session is published. All you have to do is like the New Inceptions page on Facebook, and then underneath the following tab, just select See First. So guys, that's it for session 103. Thanks for sticking around this long, long session, I understand. And again, and remember, if you have any courses that you want to sell or you want to help some folks create their own sales funnels, check out newinceptions.com/clickfunnels. Get those free 14 days. And that said, thanks for joining Eric, Daniel, myself in this one. Until next time, gang, dig in, have fun, take care in whatever you're creating. And we'll see you back here next time.
Thanks for listening to the Angles of Latitude podcast. Connect with us at home, at work, or on the go at facebook.com/newinceptions, on Twitter at newinceptions, Instagram at new.inceptions, and on the web at newinceptions.com.